This is Movies for the Blind, episode 288, Rescue from Gilligan's Island, part 3 of 3.
I want you to know that the government is greatly in your debt.
Why not? The government's greatly in debt to everyone else, too.
Hi, and welcome to Movies for the Blind, where you can enjoy films without looking at a screen. I'm Valerie Hunter. We're headed for the conclusion of Rescue from Gilligan's Island. And I've been talking about how most of the cast couldn't really shake off the fame of their roles in this popular series. One who didn't have as much trouble was Jim Backus, who played Thurston Howell III. He had already established himself as a strong character actor in the sitcom I Married Joan, and in movies like the Tracy and Hepburn classic Pat and Mike. He was best known at the time for playing James Dean's father in Rebel Without a Cause. Mr. Howell may not have been a typecasting problem for Backus as much as another role he played, one that is not a favorite for a lot of vision-impaired people, the nearsighted cartoon character Mr. Magoo. He would tell the story of working with Marilyn Monroe on a film and her beckoning him to her dressing room, only to plead with him to do the voice of Magoo. Backus's Mr. Howell is, of course, one of the castaways who were finally rescued from being shipwrecked on an island for 15 years. The skipper and Gilligan have started revisiting their old friends to have them sign a paper which absolves the skipper from the shipwreck, having insurance pay for his new boat, the Minnow II. Meanwhile, two Russian, we think, spies have been following them to take back a spy satellite disc that Gilligan wears around his neck because it helped them escape a deadly tsunami which led to the rescue. So, let's find out what's become of the Howells and the rest in the conclusion of Rescue from Gilligan's Island. Later, on the campus of a university, the professor wears a lab coat as he works in a laboratory. He makes notes. Four cheerleaders with pom-poms burst in.
Professor!
Girls, you shouldn't rush in on me like that.
Well, we kept on knocking, but you didn't answer.
Well, I'm sorry, but I'm very busy. You'll have to come back some other time.
Oh. No, we have to talk to you now. You've just been elected homecoming king for the big game. We even have a special cheer for you. Come on, girls.
They get into a line. They jump and gather around him.
Girls, please, I am in the middle of an experiment.
But don't you like the cheer?
Well, yes, it's very clever, but I have no time for these things.
Oh, please, you've got to be the homecoming king.
Besides, I thought you girls always elected a romantic figure as homecoming king. How about a movie star? Like, Tab Hunter.
You're kidding!
You were on that island a long time.
You're a romantic figure now, Professor. Missing all those years on some mysterious tropical island? You've got every girl in school turned on.
Turned on?
Oh, he's so macho!
Macho?
Come on, let's do the cheer again.
No, no, please, girls, I have work to do.
They line up on either side of him in a kick line.
Be the homecoming king. Now, please let me get back to my work.
They jump up and down and jog happily to the doors. They go out into the hall. And the professor returns to his work.
Who is it?
Miss Ainsworth.
Oh, come in, Miss Ainsworth. Come in.
A prim older woman enters.
Ah, it is good to see a mature, intelligent woman.
Oh, thank you, Professor.
I have been interrupted all day long by young, impulsive females who do not understand the importance of scientific work.
I understand, Professor. My anthropology department is also engaged in scientific study.
May I say, Miss Ainsworth, that your research is very well known. Very well known indeed.
Currently, I'm preparing a study on tribal customs in remote parts of the world.
Oh, like the natives we sometimes encountered from nearby islands.
Exactly. Perhaps you could tell me something about their tribal customs. For example, their courtship rituals? Anything unusual?
Oh, indeed. A significant part of the courtship procedure involved sharing coconut milk through a common straw. I believe that crude straw was called a watubi.
Oh, fascinating. And so different from courtship in this country. where two people kiss. Like this.
She takes him in her arms and kisses him.
Please, Miss Ainsworth, I have work to do.
So have I.
Oh, Miss Ainsworth, turn off your macho!
She kisses him again as he struggles. Gilligan and the skipper walk in and stop.
I wonder what the professor's inventing now.
She drops him on the floor. Straightening her suit and adjusting her glasses, she starts out between them.
Good night, gentlemen.
And leaves as the professor stands.
I am constantly interrupted. Women have become so aggressive since we were on the island. Isn't that a shame?
The skipper smiles.
Anyway, gentlemen, I'm delighted to see you again. Now, what was that insurance problem you phoned about?
Ah, Professor, is that one of your experiments?
Yes. Mm-hmm. But it starts over there, Gilligan.
He goes to another table of equipment.
Professor, look at all this stuff. I mean, how do you...
He turns with his arms out, knocking the equipment over.
Gilligan!
Sorry, Professor.
Oh, that's all right, Gilligan. That's not part of my experiment. You see, I was expecting you today, so I set that up especially for you.
Well, thanks, Professor.
I really must get back to my work. I've isolated a new organic polymer, a heavy plastic that's impervious to weather and virtually indestructible.
He gets out a frisbee.
I'm trying to think of a good use for it. Here's what it looks like.
Receiving it, the skipper flings it to Gilligan, who tosses it to the professor.
Say, perhaps we'll make a good toy.
Say, perhaps you can call it a frisbee.
Gilligan throws it to him again.
Frisbee? Why frisbee?
Because that's its name.
I don't like to tell you this, Professor, but really, this has been on the market for quite a while.
Yeah, well, that's what comes from being on the island all those years.
Last week, I invented the electric toothbrush. The week before, pantyhose.
Why don't you invent something that hasn't been invented before?
Gilligan, he knows that already. Only an idiot would invent something that's already been invented.
Gilligan awkwardly points to the professor.
I'm sorry, Professor,
it's all
but
right,
I'm trying
skipper.
To...
Skipper, in my anxiety to create the things I dreamed about on the island... I fail to recognize that some of them might have been created in my absence.
He pulls out a skateboard.
For example.
Which he hands to Gilligan.
A skateboard.
So I found out. And I thought I was going to revolutionize the furniture moving industry.
Do you mind if I try it?
Well, help yourself, Gilligan.
He steps away.
Now, Skipper, about that insurance paper.
They glance toward Gilligan. Then the skipper gets out the paper.
Yes, Professor, I need your signature. I've got a paper here for you to read.
Ah, yes.
He hands it to him. As another man enters, Gilligan skateboards into him.
Of all people, one of the most brilliant men in the country.
Thank you, but who is he?
Gilligan, the professor was talking about him.
I'm sorry, Dean. These are my good friends, the skipper and Gilligan.
Gilligan shakes the skipper's hand.
We were all shipwrecked together on the island.
You spent 15 years with him?
Yes, sir. When the professor first met me, I was a young, stupid kid. He's made me what I am today.
Gilligan, why don't we leave these gentlemen alone? I'm sure they've got important matters to talk over, academic paraphernalia.
As a matter of fact, I've been trying to meet with you for a month, Professor.
Well, I'm sorry about that, Dean, but I've been terribly, terribly busy.
Gilligan, why don't we take a walk around the campus?
Well, that's a good idea, Skipper. I'll see you later.
Come nice on, to have bumped into you.
Come on.
Good day, gentlemen.
The skipper pulls Gilligan into the hall.
Professor, I'm afraid you've been neglecting your primary duty.
Oh, but I've taught all my classes, and I've been hard at work.
Do you know how many alumni meetings and foundations had you booked for speaking engagements?
I'm sorry, Dean, but
Professor,
I've been...
Professor, you are a celebrity. Those people who hear you speak will donate money to the college.
That's public relations work.
Exactly. You can make this the biggest school on the West Coast.
We're on the East Coast.
That's how big I want it to be. Understand?
Big is not necessarily better, Dean.
My boy. Let's sit down and discuss this on an equal basis. Boss to employee.
Outside, Gilligan and the skipper walk through the campus, followed by the spies wearing college letter sweaters. The first one grabs Gilligan's shoulder.
Ah, fellow classmates, no?
No.
We're just visiting an old friend.
We are exchange students.
Exchange students?
Yeah, we exchange this.
Money.
For this.
The disc.
No thanks.
Looks like a lot of money, little buddy.
I don't care. My good luck charm's not for sale.
Sorry, gents. Come on, Gilligan.
They walk away.
Don't worry. We get them later when they come out.
Back in the lab.
Hi, Dean.
The dean leaves as the professor sits at a table.
He's not very polite.
Well.
Hi, Professor.
Hi, Gilligan.
What's the problem, Professor?
Oh, they want to use me to sweet-talk the alumni.
He stands.
Make speeches and be in parades. They don't care about my students, my research, my ideas.
Well, I know back on the island, we cared about your research. We didn't understand it, but we cared about it.
Yeah, and we cared about each other, too. I mean, you cared about the Howells. The Howells cared about Ginger. Ginger cared about Marianne. Marianne cared about me.
Gilligan, we know who all was on the island.
No, but Gilligan is right. I mean, we always tried to help each other. And I'll be happy to help you out now, Skipper. Hey. May I say your insurance company is vindictive and ruthless?
No, it's Pacific and Western.
Gilligan, let the man sign the paper.
He does.
Oh, thanks a lot, Professor. And don't forget, we'll see you on the boat at Christmas time.
Outside, holding a sign for the track and field team. The spies wait.
Remembering plan. When they come out of building, we stop Skinny One. You stop him, ask questions. While you are talking, I hit him over the head with this.
The sign, which bumps the second spy.
Good idea.
He rubs his head.
While he is down, we get this. We get this, we are heroes.
Smiling, they watch. Then look another way.
Look, they come out different door.
One further away.
Quick, we take shortcut through field.
Soon after, as athletes jog on a track, the spies cross the track onto a field. The first one points at the skipper and Gilligan walking far ahead of them. They run after them. Meanwhile, an athlete also runs to throw a javelin, which flies high through the air. Another athlete throws a shot put, which also flies far. The spies keep running while the javelin and shot put start to descend. The javelin lands, stuck in the field, as the first spy runs straight into it. The shot put comes down and lands at the feet of the second spy, tripping him. They're both on the ground. As the second spy favors his ankle, the first spy sits up and watches Gilligan and the skipper walking farther away. He reaches into his pocket for his radio, pulls out the antenna and listens.
You got disc?
No, Chief, not yet. I bump into problem. Yvonne, problem bump into him. But not to worry. We have disc very soon. Wherever Skinny One goes, Ivan and Dimitri will follow.
Dimitri shuts off the radio and keeps watching. Later, in a huge mansion, the Howells dine with two men and two women at the ends of a very long table.
Excellent vintage, Howell. Must have been a good year. 1492. I forget whether it came over on the Nina, the Pinta, or the Santa Maria.
At the other end, Luffy presses a button.
Destin, darling.
Excuse me, gentlemen, my wife.
Splendid idea, that intercom.
Well, the long distance. You see, at first we considered carrier pigeons, and then for obvious reasons we reconsidered.
He brushes off his shoulder and presses his own button.
What is it? I think the ladies would like an after dinner mint.
Would they like the mint in San Francisco or the one in Philadelphia?
That's my Thurston.
In spite of your shipwreck, Thurston, you seem in good shape. Oh, I'm fit as a fiddle. Stradivarius, of course.
Have a cigar, Thurston. Domestic, I'm afraid.
Domestic? Oh, please. Phillips, where are our cigars from Havana?
Oh, one moment, sir.
Phillips steps to a window. Outside, a helicopter is landing in the night.
Just arriving, sir.
Thank you, Phillips. Meanwhile, gentlemen, I think we can discuss that little business proposition you had in mind.
Ah, yes. We have decided to issue 1 million shares of preferred stock and 1 million shares of common.
Make that 2 million preferred. There's nothing common about a Howell Enterprise. A little financial joke.
A bearded man in fatigues brings in a cigar box.
Thank you, Fidel.
Saluting, he leaves.
We were considering your investment in the neighborhood of 100 million.
Well, I'm afraid I don't know anything about that neighborhood. You see, I never go slumming.
At the other end.
Darling, without your leadership, there was no social season.
Without you on the symphony committee, the musical seasons were a disaster.
You're so flattering.
Oh, and the ballet. Without dear Lovey, Swan Lake turned into Disco Duck.
I promise you now that I'm back, everything will be different.
Oh, definitely.
Phillips goes to the front door.
And I certainly hope you ask Mr. Howell for some financial assistance.
Oh, I'll try. But sometimes Thurston treats me like a child. When I want to talk about money, he says,
oh, go play with your blocks.
Your blocks?
Yes. 42nd Street, 43rd Street, 44th Street, 40...
At the door.
Yes. We're Gilligan and the skipper.
Oh, yes, from the island.
I'm Gilligan. He was in charge of the shipwreck.
Gilligan. Now, I hope we're not intruding. Mr. Howell wasn't expecting us.
Oh, I'm certain he'd be delighted to see you.
He lets them enter.
Thank you.
They step through the foyer as Phillips closes the glass and ironrod door. In the dining room.
So I said, now mind you, this is the funny part. You can't park it here. That's right.
Phillips returns.
Mr. Skipper and Mr. Gilligan. To see Mr. and Mrs. Thurston Howell the Third.
Oh.
They stand.
Gilligan! Captain!
They rushed to them at the doorway.
Dear, dear, dear. Why didn't you call ahead?
Well, we would have called, Mrs. Howell, but your phone number's unlisted.
Uh-huh. That was your house. Sorry, we didn't know you were having a party. We would have
Oh, you must stay and have dinner with us.
Oh, well, thank you. No, we're really not hungry.
No, we're just starved.
Folks, I want you to meet some very dear and old friends of ours.
They were on the island with us.
Yes, this is the captain, and this is Gilligan. This is Mr. Devonshire, Mrs. Devonshire, Mr. Fellows, and Mrs. Fellows.
Oh, do stay and dine with us.
No, actually, we have some private business to talk over. It can wait, though.
No, nonsense. Of course it can. We'll just be a second, folks. Step into the library.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Starkey. Excuse us.
Yes, it's down one of the halls. After you go. We'll see you later.
The four of them leave the dining room.
Old and dear friends. Aren't we fortunate, darling, never to have been shipwrecked?
In the library.
Mr. Howell, the insurance company has to pay me for minnow one before I can pay for minnow two.
Oh, dear. We didn't know that you needed money.
Well, why didn't you ask me? I feel hurt, deeply hurt. Grateful, perhaps, but hurt.
Oh, that's very nice of you, Mr. Howell. But that's my problem. Now, if you'll just sign here.
Anything that you want.
At a desk, Howell signs the paper.
I don't believe it.
I love you. You forgot to turn off the intercom.
On the desk.
Imagine being shipwrecked.
Which one of us is Riff and which one is Raff?
To subject us to even meeting those two boars.
Thurston, those people are insulting the skipper and Gilligan.
That is despicable. I refuse to do business with people of such ilk.
Well, it doesn't bother us.
Well, it bothers us.
Well, I want them out of my house.
And off my land.
The Howells walk off.
It took them 2 weeks to go down the driveway.
In the dining room.
We heard everything you said.
The deal is off. Nobody shames my friends. Throw them out. Don't even validate their parking tickets.
This way, ladies and gentlemen.
The guests leave the table.
Yes, come along, my dear. Let's go.
Phillips leads them to the front door. And opens it to find the spies arriving.
Who are you?
Wearing tuxedos.
We are with them.
Then you're out too.
Howell forces his guests out, joining the spies. Then he shuts the door and leaves the spies outside. Later, in Kansas, Marianne sits at a mirror in a wedding dress, holding back tears. When she looks in the mirror, recovering again, she dabs her nose and eyes with a handkerchief.
Just a minute.
She checks her hair, which is pinned up, then turns away from the mirror and stands in a bedroom.
Come in.
As she smiles hard, a bridesmaid enters.
Marianne. You look wonderful.
She hugs her.
Well, I feel wonderful, Cindy. Not nervous, are you? No. Why should I be nervous? It's traditional. All brides are nervous. I'm not. See?
She holds up her hand, which shakes badly.
Marianne.
They sit on the bed.
We've been best friends since we were kids. What's going on? Well, Herbert loves me. And he's waited 15 years to marry me, the whole time I was on the island. What are you trying to say? Oh, Cindy, he's changed.
She stands.
I've changed. Nothing's the same anymore. Oh, I don't love him.
Her friend stands.
Then you shouldn't marry him. Cindy, he's waited 15 years.
Marianne, you're making a mistake.
No. No, I am going through with this no matter what happens. Oh, Cindy, and I don't want you to tell anybody what I've just told you.
But
nobody. Never, ever. Promise? Remember? Like when we were kids?
They spit in their palms, punching them. High five and give thumbs up.
Right. Oh, now, we don't have much time.
They sit again.
See if you can put yourself together.
Cindy helps with the garter.
Oh, there are two men outside who say they're your old friends.
But you know all of my old friends.
Not these two. One of them, well, so far he's knocked down the bridal bower, two rows of chairs, flower arrangement.
Gilligan?
That's his name, and the other one is...
She mimes a big belly.
Skipper.
Do I send them away?
Oh, no, but just give me a couple of minutes, okay?
Cindy nods, and they give each other thumbs up.
Right.
She heads for the door as Marianne sits at the mirror again, trying to smile. Trying again, she flashes her teeth, but starts crying with her head down. She looks up and wipes her tears, smiling hard again.
Come in!
The door opens.
Marianne?
Skipper and Gilligan enter.
You look wonderful!
He picks her up as she hugs him.
So happy! happy to see you.
Marianne, you look wonderful.
He does the same.
Gillian, put her down. You're wrecking her train.
He does.
As you can see, our little buddy is still his same old self.
How did you find out about the wedding?
Well, actually, we didn't. We came here to get your signature on a piece of paper.
First, we have to get the paper signed.
Oh, I was going to surprise everybody at the Christmas party with my new husband.
Just think, Gillian, Marianne waited 15 years for this day.
And Herbert Ruckers waited 15 years.
That is 30 years.
She bursts out crying and sits.
Between 15 and 15, 30?
Yes, but I don't know how you do it. You always say the wrong thing.
Marianne, did I say the wrong thing?
No, I'm the happiest girl in the whole world. I'm just a little nervous.
Well, but that's natural.
She's happy. Why is she crying? I always laugh when I'm happy.
Because you're not a bride.
Oh, I am just so happy.
She stands.
To be here to see how happy I am on the happiest day of my life.
If she gets any happy, she's going to drown herself.
All girls are happy on their wedding day.
Especially after 15 years, and he waited 15 years. That makes 30 years.
Gilligan, would you cut that out?
She sits again.
Hey, what's wrong with saying 30 years? Unless the judge says it.
Yes?
Are you ready, Jack?
Yes.
No.
Is
it yes or no?
We're ready. She's not.
Just give us a couple of minutes, Sidney.
Will you both please stay for the wedding?
It would be our pleasure.
Yeah, after 15 years, you got... Oh, I didn't mean it.
Let's get out of here. Marianne.
They leave the bedroom. They go to a backyard where guests are seated and the groom and preacher wait.
Sit right there on the aisle and try not to trip the bride. Pardon me.
They find seats on either side of Cindy, who holds a handkerchief to her nose.
Miss, why are you crying? You're not getting married.
That's why I'm crying.
Marianne's crying because she's getting married. You're crying because you're not getting married. Skipper?
What?
I don't know whether to throw rice or hankies.
Just sit there and be quiet, Gilligan.
Behind Gilligan are the spies in cowboy hats, who move up to sit on either side of him, making him nervous.
Pardon me. You a friend of bride or groom?
Of the bride.
You bring presents?
No, I didn't know it was going to be a wedding.
It's never too late to give presents.
Sure it is.
Necklace would be wonderful present.
Where would I buy a necklace now?
It's best to give something you own. Like old saying, something old, something new, something borrowed right from you.
Gilligan!
The skipper stands with Cindy. Gilligan goes to them as the spies lunge for him and miss.
Try to understand, little buddy. Cindy's in love with Herbert. That's why she's crying. And Herbert's in love with Cindy.
Well, Herbert's in love with Cindy, and Cindy's in love with Herbert, and Marianne's in love... Who'd you say Marianne's in love with?
Nobody, but that's the point. But Marianne's marrying Herbert anyway.
Why?
Because he waited 15 years for her, and she waited 15 years for him.
Oh, no, now she's doing it. You better stop saying 15 years.
Gilligan, it's up to us to straighten out this whole mix-up.
Oh, I don't think we can.
Why not?
I think it's too late.
From the side, they see Marianne and Herbert in front of the preacher.
Excuse us. Come on, Gilligan.
They hurry away.
And do you, Herbert, take this woman, Marianne, to love, honor, cherish, and hold forever and ever as your lawful wedded wife?
Sitting on a tractor.
Little buddy, are you sure you know what to do?
In a wagon behind him.
Don't worry about me. Move it out.
Lifting a front loader. The skipper drives the tractor from a barn.
You, Marianne, take Herbert to love, honor, cherish, and hold forever and ever.
Pulling Gilligan in the wagon, the skipper speeds toward the ceremony, just past Marianne. Gilligan holds out his hand. She drops her bouquet, and he pulls her onto the wagon. The guests stand, watching them speed away across the farm. The spies look at each other. They start running after the wagon, and other men follow. Marianne sits in the wagon in her wedding gown as the men run after her, Gilligan, and the skipper.
And Herbert's in love with Cindy, and Cindy's in love with Herbert.
I should have had the good sense to figure that out by myself.
I think we better stop talking and start doing something. Skipper, let's go! Move it out!
He tries to make the big tractor go faster as the crowd of men chase it down a dirt road. A white horse watches from a corral nearby. The skipper looks back through kicked-up dust and rounds a curve. The spies and the other men slow down, watching them pull farther away.
We take shortcut through field. Good idea.
They run to the left, heading for a field. The skipper peers under the front loader to see ahead. as the pursuers run past trees and across the field. They reach the other end of the field, a bit ahead of the tractor. The skipper turns it away from them and is able to head back the other way, though the men are now close behind.
Don't let him catch us!
Skipper! Go, come on, come on!
I can't go any faster!
The skipper drives around the curve again. The white horse watches again. Gilligan throws a big round squash, which knocks the men over like they're bowling pins. They stop.
A strike, skipper! A strike! I got a strike!
The skipper runs to the back of the wagon as the men struggle to get up. Marianne gets off the wagon. Gilligan hands the skipper a watermelon, and he throws it at them. Gilligan throws another one. They keep throwing melons, which burst open, causing the men to slip on them. Just as Ivan gets up, another melon lands and he slips on it. The horse lowers its head as Gilligan throws a couple more melons at the pile of men. He hands some more for the skipper to throw. The horse watches again as the men fall all over themselves in the fruit and mud.
Where were you, Marianne?
I don't know.
Let's go back.
Never.
Why not?
Because I am not going to marry Herbert Rucker.
They look behind them to the backyard, where Herbert kisses Cindy in front of the preacher.
And why not?
Because his wife won't let him.
Marianne smiles and laughs.
We did it, little sweetheart.
Later, the castaways are on the minnow too.
We're ready to get underway. Cast off.
Aye, aye, sir.
As our guests relax on deck, Gilligan goes to the stern and bends down to untie a rope. A foot steps on his hand.
Hey, you're stepping on my hand.
Dimitri has a gun.
Please get up and be quiet. You have swamping Vivant.
Oh, I know what you want. The big box of money Mr. Howell gave me. I'll go get it for you, okay?
Hold it!
He and Ivan jump aboard.
Everyone, please, putting hands in air.
He means put your hands up?
We all know what he means, Gilligan.
They want my box of money, Skipper.
You gentlemen want your own boxes of money? What denominations do you prefer?
Not interested in money.
Good heavens, they must be madmen.
We take what we want.
Ivan finally takes the disc.
Wait a minute, that's my good luck charm.
Lucky for us.
He steps past the gun.
We give that to our government, we get medal. Hold it.
Another man takes the gun.
FBI.
His partner holds up a badge.
Oh, goody.
If you folks don't mind, we'll take these two along with us.
Will somebody tell us what this is all about?
Can I have my good luck charm back?
In due time. Thanks to you, we captured these spies. I want you to know that the government is greatly in your debt.
Why not? The government's greatly in debt to everyone else, too.
The agent looks at Howell.
Let's go.
As they escort the spies off the boat, the guests stand.
Okay, hero, get ready to cast off.
Aye, aye, sir.
Saluting, Gilligan turns and falls off the boat.
Okay, little buddy, I'll come and get you. Hang on.
He climbs down from the deck. Later, the Minnow 2 cruises through open water on the bridge.
I can't understand it, Gilligan.
Understand what, Skipper?
Well, I set our course for that little island just off the coast.
Right.
Well, it's been hours now. We seem to be heading straight out to sea. Unless the compass is wrong.
The compass can't be wrong. I just cleaned it before we left.
You cleaned it?
Yeah, it's a good thing I did. It was really dirty when I got in there. There was a little piece of metal jammed to the bottom. I took it out there and threw it away, and I polished that copper.
Oh, Gilligan, that was the magnet. That's what controls the needle that I steer by. Gilligan!
The skies get dark.
Well, we better not take any chances. I better start heading back.
Aye, aye, sir.
I'll steer by the sun for a while.
The sun soon gets covered with clouds.
What sun?
What do we do now?
Maybe we can circle the storm. We'll go west until...
Lightning flashes. They turn to find more lightning flashing.
Batten down the hatches.
Batten down the hatches.
Send out an SOS.
Send out an SOS. How do you spell that?
Watch out!
Big waves head straight for them. Gilligan and the skipper get sprayed with water. And the waves begin to bear down on them. Later, Gilligan, the skipper, the Howells, Ginger, the professor, and Marianne struggle through a lagoon and start onto a beach. Gilligan is the last to stop swimming as the others collapse on the sand. On his feet, Gilligan wipes his face. Slowly, the skipper turns back and looks at him. Gilligan turns to Ginger and Marianne, who stare at him. He turns to the Howells. Thurston gapes and Lovey catches her breath. Turning to the professor, he gets a defeated sigh. Each look has stung him. With one more glance at the skipper, he walks away toward the jungle.
Oh, he didn't mean any harm, Skipper.
Neither did the iceberg that sank the Titanic.
Any idea where we are?
Not really. That storm turned us round and round and blew us all over the map for 12 days.
But surely we must be someplace. If we weren't, we wouldn't be here.
That's my lovey's long suit. Logic.
Yes.
Well, wherever we are, thanks to your expert seamanship, Skipper, we're all alive.
Gilligan returns.
Hey, I know where we are.
Now, how could you know that, Gilligan? That wind was blowing 90 miles an hour in every direction.
But I know, Skipper.
How do you know, Gilligan?
Look what I found.
He holds up a sign for the Minnow One.
Oh, no! The same island.
The professor can only shake his head, and the women sigh.
Well, why are you all so sad? I mean, we're home again, huh?
The skipper stands.
Yes, Gilligan. We're home again.
Yeah.
He smacks him with his cap, and Gilligan drops the sign on his foot. Gilligan runs off, with the skipper running after him. They splash back into the water of their lagoon. This described version of Rescue from Gilligan's Island was produced for Movies for the Blind. Bob Denver is Gilligan. Alan Hale is the skipper. Jim Backus is Thurston Howell III. Natalie Schaefer is Mrs. Howell. Judith Baldwin is Ginger. Russell Johnson is the professor. Don Wells is Marianne. A Sherwood Schwartz production.
In the Tropic Island mess.
No phone.
No light.
No motor cars. Not a single luxury. Like Robinson Crusoe. It's primitive as can be. So join us here each week, my friends. You're sure to get a smile. From seven stranded castaways. Here on Gilligan's Island.
And that was Rescue from Gilligan's Island. Yes, they are back on the island, setting up things for two other sequel TV movies. The Castaways on Gilligan's Island, where the Howells set up a resort business that was supposed to lead to another TV series, and The Harlem Globetrotters on Gilligan's Island, which I guess the less said the better. The last remaining survivors of the series cast in real life are Ginger and Marianne, Tina Louise and Don Wells. We get a bit more serious for our next film, a classic of American literature which pretty much established the form of the American novel in the 19th century.
A blessing on ye righteous people of the colony of the Massachusetts.
Have you not heard of the scandal in the Master Dinsdale's church?
Esther Green, you have been found guilty of adultery.
Who accuses her?
Her child.
I found the flowers in the field. Where did you find me?
I found you on a rose bush.
I beg you to speak out the name of your fellow sinner.
Speak, woman, speak!
I speak! Speak! No! No, never! I wish I could bear his agony as well as mine.
How can I stand in my pulpit and meet the eyes of the people who are hungry for truth, knowing in my soul that I'm a living lie?
I shall not betray him to the law. Let him hide himself in outward honor if he may. Nonetheless, he shall not escape me.
So that all men may know you are guilty of the sin of adultery, it is now ordered that you shall wear upon your bosom for the rest of your natural life the scarlet
letter A.
That's The Scarlet Letter, next time on Movies for the Blind. To find out more about the movies, about description, and how to subscribe, go to the blog, moviesfortheblind.com, where you can also find out about this podcast's Creative Commons license. If you like the podcast, put it in writing by leaving a review on iTunes, looking up Movies for the Blind under Podcasts at the iTunes Store. You can also follow us on Twitter and like us on Facebook. Make sure you're following updates on Facebook. And subscribe to us on YouTube, where we show you how it's done. The movies are from the Internet Archive, so please support universal access to human knowledge by visiting and donating at archive.org. Thank you for downloading and for listening. Be back next week. Take care.